social media,
Yeah.
though as regularly as some would like. I just don't find a lot of time for social media. I'm too social of a person. Face to face, I guess.
Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk weather with Tornado Bob. We've got Pam Perry and birds and the latest local news from our KEXC newsroom.
We receive support from Lake Tax Advisors, where Ron Berg and his staff offer tax accounting and payroll services for Minnesota businesses with locations in Grand Rapids and Rush City. More information at lakes.tax. And we receive support from Dragonfly Cafe, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment. Special orders available and more at drinkdragonfly.com.
Coming up at 9 o'clock, we bring you Headwaters.
You're listening to 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people and the land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KEXE.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you.
Lots of things going on in our region, including Watermark Arts Center. Their next Story Slam is this Thursday, October 16th at Bemidji Brewing. The music starts at 6, stories at 7. This month's theme is Scared Stupid. Stories should be 5 minutes or less. You can find more information at watermarkartscenter.org. And tomorrow, Doug Oman is going to be at Northern Exposure to Lifelong Learning. That is at the Bagley American Legion. It's at 9:30. And Oman is going to be talking about the Barns of Minnesota. And coming up this Sunday, a waffle brunch fundraiser for a new dog park in Deer River from 9 to 1 at the Deer River Vets Club. Tickets available at the door or in advance at the Chocolate Dog. That reminds me of we have a big birthday to acknowledge that we haven't yet, John. And I'm curious if you have met this birthday person. No, person's not the right word for this. Have you met Bam Bam before, Dan Gannon's dog?
I have not.
It is Bam Bam's birthday today. Bam Bam.
Wow.
Bam Bam is 1 year old and the best boy 90% of the time. And there is a photo of Bam Bam that you will love, I believe, on the countertop at a local brewery, sipping on a little bit of beer for his birthday. Good old Bam Bam. So we wish you the best, Bam Bam. Keep being good and a little bit bad as well.
Yeah. Go out and eat one of those smashed toads on the road like my dog. Happy birthday.
Cold feet, wet floor, sun alight through the front door. My head hurts, my back aches. Mom calls as my voice breaks and she asks me how I'm doing. And I say I'm fine. Burnt toast, milk spread, stubbed my toe on the doorstep. My cat's lost, my keys gone. My neighbor mows at the break of dawn and they ask me how I'm doing. And I say I'm fine. They say the minor inconveniences are part of the experience of life. And these minor inconveniences are part of the experience of mine. Stranger from last night, overstayed like a bug bite. I found him in my kitchen, doing all my dishes. And he asks me how I'm doing, and I say I'm fine. They say the minor inconveniences are part of the experience of life. These minor inconveniences are part of the experience of mine. And I know now that it's all right. It just takes time to breathe again. And I know now that it's all right. It just is part of the experience of life. And these minor inconveniences are part of the experience of mine.
B.B. Stockwell with a song called Minor Inconveniences, celebrating Bam Bam's first birthday today. But sometimes there's minor inconveniences, right, with our pets.
Yeah.
You know, when your cat jumps on the bed with a little mouse in its mouth, you know, or we get a little gas from your dog when you bring in here, you know, but we put up with it.
We don't have much choice.
No, I guess we don't. Dan just wrote in and said, Latimer forgets Bam Bam tried to hew your beard off at either the volunteer appreciation party or the fundraiser at Clocko.
Oh, sure he did. Yes. Now I remember.
Now you remember, Bam. Just a minor inconvenience there.
I wouldn't call that a minor inconvenience. That was just a display of love.
Coming up, we're going to be talking weather, but there's lots of things going on throughout our region. So many places John's been mentioning all morning as he's on the North Shore, paths and walks to take. And then this time of year, there's things going on at places like the Northland Arboretum in Brainerd. They have their haunted trail going on, and that begins October 16th. It's from the 18th to the 18th. And it's from 7 to 9 each night. And you can choose which walk you're going to want to take on that haunted trail. A low scare, a high scare, or an insane high scare option. John, which would you choose of those options?
I probably would be perfectly happy with low scare.
Yeah.
I find I don't watch horror movies. I just don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
Life is frightening enough. I don't need to be put in situations where I get even more scared.
Let us know which choice you have, or if you are attending the Northland Arboretum's Haunted Trail. You can give us your feedback, 218-326-1234. Thanks so much for listening in this morning. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be talking weather with Tornado Bob.
We receive support from the First National Bank of Coleraine since 1906, serving the needs of the community and working with their friends and neighbors. With branches in Coleraine and Grand Rapids, more information at coleranebank.com. Member FDIC.
A little music now from a new album into KAXE. It's Trombone Shorty and the New Breed Brass Band, Second Line Sunday is the name of it. It was released 20 years to the day after Hurricane Katrina. The Second Line Sunday is a new collaboration from Trombone Shorty and the New Breed Brass Band. It's a reflection on culture and tradition, family and community, and survival and resilience. Let's take a listen.
Won't you rock the boat? Don't tip the boat over. Baby, let me bring you closer and do what you do. But watch my shoes. Sun is shining, birds is chirping. Baby, I like how you move. Scrolling deep down in the trim, baby, I got news for you. We going to the second line, so get busy. Sidewalk stepping all through that city. Buck jumping, watch you move first. Drop down and baby, let me see your footwork. Baby, won't you rock the boat? Don't tip the boat over. Baby, let me bring you closer and do what you do.
listen and do what you do, but watch my shoes. Baby, it's that time, relax your mind and let me see your footwork. Bring you closer and do what you do, but watch my shoes. Baby, won't you rock the boat? I don't tip the boat over. Oh, baby, let me bring you closer and do what you do, but watch my shoes.
Get it rockin', baby, we up in the city, uptown, downtown, you know that they rockin' with me. Second line dance with a 6-4 swag, dippin' through the trim, man, you ain't even gotta ask. And I'm like, yes, sir, Newbie with Trumbo Shorty, we bout to bless ya. Keep it quiet, I got him lookin' like a Tesla. Leslie Lip on song, roulette, and back the thing up like you been listening to Juve. Dancing through the streets, got it lookin' like it's a movie. And on Super Sunday, we gon' celebrate it too late. You gotta know that we the best now. All the mothers, we gonna put them on the rest now, yeah. Leslie LeBron, Tom Roulette, and back the thing up like you've been listening to Juve. You gotta know that we the best now, and all the mothers, we gon' put them on the rest now.
Baby, won't you rock the boat? I don't tip the boat over. But baby, let me bring you closer and do what you do, but watch my shoes. Baby, won't you rock the boat? I don't tip the boat over. But baby, let me bring you closer and do what you do, but watch my shoes.
Rock the Boat's the name of the song off the album by Trombone Shorty and the New Breed Brass Band in celebration of survival and resilience, released exactly 20 years to the day after Hurricane Katrina. You can hear new music like this coming up at 9 o'clock. We've got Dan Gannon for Headwaters, 1 o'clock today, On the River with DJ Ironsides. Tonight at 7, John Henningsgaard will be our host for our volunteer program, On the River.
Programming is supported by Empty Bowls, fighting local hunger and building a stronger community with the Grand Rapids and Deer River Community Cafe. The event takes place Thursday, October 23rd at Timberlake Lodge from 11 to 2 and 4 to 7. Tickets include soup and a locally made ceramic bowl. More info on Facebook at Itasca Empty Bowls Project.
It is time to talk weather with Tornado Bob. I'm Heidi Holton from KEXC in Grand Rapids. Everybody's on remote today. We've got John Latimer from the North Shore on Zoom, and Tornado Bob pulled off somewhere on an exit in the Twin Cities area, I believe, to join us to talk weather. Thank you both.
Hey, I'm not in Twin Cities yet. I've made it to Sandstone, but that's about it.
Okay, all right. In Sandstone. There we go.
Yep. So here I am. How's the weather up on the North Shore, John?
It is lovely. The lake is fairly calm this morning. It's been windy. East and southeast winds here for the last 3 days or so.
Okay.
Really stirred up the lake a bit. Some big rolling waves.
Yeah, that would give you big waves if you had an east wind.
Yeah, I didn't feel any desire to go out and go swimming. didn't look like anything I wanted to be part of.
Oh, but you like swimming, so it's a little surprising.
I did a bit of hiking and experienced some micro weather. You know, where you're in a valley and I don't know, the wind tumbles down the valley somehow. Interesting, inexplicable to a guy of my limited knowledge, but just as much fun either way.
Okay. Yeah, so the North Shore has a lot of varied climates because it's a significant change in elevation. It's about 1,000 feet between the lake and the North Shore Ridge. In some places, a little bit more than that. And also, of course, the lake has a moderating effect, makes it cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter. That just really does affect what grows there. You've been talking about that. I heard you talking about that this morning, the different trees, the different seasons of the maples and everything like that. So, you're enjoying that.
You know, the interesting thing about it is that day and night, it's pretty close to the same temperature here. It was, highs in the mid-50s, lows in the low 50s. I'd get up in the morning to watch the sunrise and walk outside expecting to be chilled and find it to be just like the day before, kind of 50 degrees.
Oh, wow.
The tapering effect.
Yeah, the low temperatures don't get very cold there, along the shore at least.
Yeah,
so you go inland, they get a little bit colder.
Maybe 30 feet above the lake right here.
Okay, yep, you're quite close to it. Yeah,
quite.
And,
yep.
But overall, the pattern remains a little bit on the warm side, and we will have some warmer temperatures coming up. In fact, if you're in southern Minnesota or places farther south, it would be trying to scroll through the weather, the model output right now, and figure out what day is going to be the warmest this week. We'll be warming up in southern Minnesota into the 70s, at least. Probably, it wouldn't surprise me to see some 80s there later this week. So, kind of staying on the warm side. And I don't see any snow in the forecast throughout the, October 14th now. Yeah, we may get through October without any snow at all. So, we'll see how that goes.
That would be not unheard of, but certainly rare. I have records of snow in many, many, many of the Octobers in the past. So at least flakes falling, it might not have accumulated, but usually there is some evidence during the month, one time or another.
Yeah, I'm just looking on the forecast here, seeing when it is cold enough. For snow, it's also rather dry, so no combination of moisture and actual snow. Maybe if you're in the northeastern corner of Minnesota, like where you are now, up in Finland.
Yeah. Well, you can see you can see that there is some effects of the snow up here. There are some gullies that are pretty well washed. And one has to imagine that it comes when the snow melts in the spring, puts a lot of water down some of these river basins.
Okay. But it also, they drain pretty quickly there if we get thunderstorms and heavy rain.
Yeah.
It comes down the hill pretty fast. So, if you have thunderstorms, heavy thunderstorms are not particularly common there, but you can get some situations where they develop along the shore. You get a little bit of a lake. They can develop along the edge of the lake breeze and provide some rain. But, northeastern Minnesota in general is not in the heavy rain corridor of Minnesota. We occasionally have a big event the 2012 flood in Duluth. But most heavy rainfall events tend to be southern Minnesota and, Western Minnesota too.
Is there a reason? Does the lake prevent heavy thunderstorms in this area? Is it?
The lake tends to steer. In the summertime when you get thunderstorms, the lake you tend to get a little bit of a local high pressure over the lake, and then you get with the Buffalo Ridge in the southwestern part of the state. That tends to point the wind a little bit more away from northeastern Minnesota than towards it. So you tend to get convergence in west central Minnesota going down to, you know, down to the Twin Cities, and then in southeast. So those are areas. I mean, you can get it up to Brainerd or whatever, Brainerd maybe once in a while in Duluth, but you go north and east of there, there's just heavy rainfall is pretty rare. It's not unheard of. We've had, like last summer, we had summer of 2024, we had one pretty heavy rainfall event up by Lake Vermilion. But it's somewhat less common than it is in southern Minnesota.
Interesting. I'm not at all convinced that northeastern Minnesota is it's a bit of a different place, and when you're sitting here on the shore, you realize just how different it might be. But the fact that it doesn't get the heavy rains that the rest of the state gets, well, we've talked about that before too, kind of that I-94 corridor where the rain
kind of
seems
summertime.
To
yeah.
Yeah. Follows that, or coming the other way, going southwest to northeast, it sort of hooks in under the point of Lake Superior and comes a little bit south. So I guess we are lucky if the rain isn't something we are in need of. How are
right.
we?
We're pretty, and we just want to add to that discussion. Minnesota does see, like, it's a pretty significant gradient from northwest to southeast in terms of annual rainfall. If you, in the northwest, gets, just close to 20 inches in the northwestern corner. If you go into the southeastern part of the state, maybe it's closer to, upper 30s or so in a lot of years. Not every year, but... yeah, so there's a significant gradient across the state. I'd say maybe more mid to upper, maybe upper 30s is more common. After they take another look at the climatology page, but in the summertime it evens out a little bit. I see it climatologically, it's more it looks pretty even across a large part of the state. But I think what happens more recently, we get these more upper level ridge scenarios, and that tends to with the circulations associated with that tend to steer the storms along that could come out of eastern Dakotas, and they kind of affect more central and southern Minnesota as they turn southeast and kind of avoid northeastern Minnesota. Northeastern Minnesota tends to be a little bit drier, and if we get to me it seems like if you get a temperature is well up in the 80s with dew points really humid, like 70s, and there's a cold front coming in, we're not going to get any rain. It just, that pattern just sort of skips us. But our patterns is for rainfall are if an upper level low comes through, and that just hasn't been the pattern that much during the summers recently.
I wanted to explore a little bit about the potential for a late fall, where you said probably not going to be any snow until maybe through the end of the month. The other thing about snow and precipitation is that at least at my house, I haven't had what I would call significant precipitation for. Well, September was pretty low, and October looks to be low at present. Yeah. I don't have a lot of rainfall for either of those months, and I'm just wondering if our drought conditions are coming back, or if they ever left.
Yeah, I don't think they ever completely left. It's been wet in some areas, but kind of dry in others. I think more dry than wet. In September I ended up about a little bit more than a half inch short. so didn't hit 3 inches, and the normal is just a little bit over 3. And in October, I had 0.4 inches on Sunday evening, and that's the only rain I've had in October. So we should end up a little bit dry in October too. But there is a little bit of rain in the forecast. We could, if we get lucky, we'll catch back up in the latter part of the month.
Okay, I haven't been home to look at my rain gauge, but you said you had 0.4 inches on Sunday.
Yep. Yeah. And
okay.
Yeah, it was kind of a line of showers that moved through, and so we got a decent evening of showers. So, yeah, there's a couple of lines that moved through.
Hmm. I suppose those were the same ones that we did get rain here Sunday night, but I slept right through it, and it couldn't have been very much because there were corners of the deck here that were protected by an overhang that were dry. And if there had been a significant amount of rain, I think it would have wet the whole deck.
Sure. Yep. And I'm just trying to looking ahead here what the best chances of rain would be. So we have another warm system coming through on Thursday night, Friday. The bulk of the rainfall, I think, though, that stayed to the northwest of us in that system. In fact, that's kind of been the pattern lately. We've had a couple of systems coming through that gave North Dakota quite a bit of rainfall, but mostly missed us. I'm looking as far ahead as I can see there. In the longer range forecast, like getting out about 10 days, which isn't reliable, it shows a system that could be a little bit wetter then, but I would not trust that. The models tend to show a high precipitation bias for us. Like they show, the pattern being a little bit, their bias is toward the pattern that looks rainier than what our climatology really is.
Hmm. Do you think this is something that we will be enduring or having as a result of the warming that is taking place, that we will maybe get less rain, that we will have an average of less rain per year than in the past?
It's possible. It's a little hard to tell exactly how things will evolve, but if we have more mid to late summer upper level ridging, that would make us drier in northern, at least, especially in northern Minnesota, but maybe not so much in southern Minnesota, because they remain maybe a little bit closer to the getting susceptible to like longer periods of dry weather, but then occasionally like a really heavy rain. And I should do an analysis of what a rainfall frequency is, how often it rains. It just seems like there are longer periods compared to 20 years ago when I first moved here. I mean, we had some dry weather, summers the first couple of years I was here. But it seems like the frequency of rainfall, we get longer periods without rain than we did when I first moved here 20 years ago. So it'd be interesting this statistic to check out.
Yeah. Well, and for the next week or so, we're looking at warm weather coming in this weekend.
Especially like Thursday, Friday will be pretty warm. It could be approaching 70, and then cooling off a little bit over the weekend from that. But nonetheless, mild weather. It's going to stay warmer than average.
Do you have any idea what the average temperature should be for this time of year?
It should be, as we get in further into October, we should be seeing highs maybe around 60 to dropping into the upper 50s. And then by the end of the month, they're kind of by the, you know, into the 40s. But that's kind of been warming a bit lately. So those aren't very common temperatures anymore for late October. We can have 70s and even in, well, not on average, but, you know, it's not become not unusual to have 70 degree highs at least once in November.
Yeah. Well,
we'll have some more weather yet.
Yeah. This time of year, I look at my list of summer projects and realize that some of them are not going to get done. And others may get done, but it'll have to be through the grace of warmer weather. So keep a little warmer weather coming, and I'll try and get some of my summer projects caught up so that I can get onto my fall projects.
Yes. And then there will be fall. It'll just go directly to winter.
I'll have to go dig my garden hose up out of the snow.
Yep.
Thanks so much, Bob, for taking the time. Safe driving as you keep traveling.
Yes, and I'll see you or talk to you next week.
All right, sounds great.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah.
Coming up, we're going to have the Up North Report, local news from our region, and then we check in with Pam Perry. It is the week we talk birds with Pam. She's a non-game wildlife biologist from the Brainerd area, and we'll talk about some migrating birds and all kinds of things coming up. If you want to tell us what you've been seeing or have a question to pose, you can always text us 218-326-1234.
We receive support from Klockow Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beer as well as modern classics for 7 years now. The tap room is open Monday through Thursday, 3 to 8, Friday and Saturday, noon to 8, and Sunday from noon to 6. More info at klockowbrewing.com. And we receive support from Oak Hill Assisted Living in Grand Rapids, providing personalized care in a home setting. More information at oakhillseniors.com.
Coming up this morning at 9 o'clock, we bring you Headwaters with your host today, DJ Dang.
For KAXC News, I'm Larissa Donovan with a special edition of the Up North Report. The Bemidji State football team has celebrated homecoming victories with a refreshing dip into Lake Bemidji for decades. The Beavers celebrated 30 years of the lake jump after winning against Northern State University 24-21 for the homecoming game on October 4th. The Bemidji State Alumni and Foundation recently obtained footage of the first ever Beaver homecoming lake jump. It was 41 degrees on October 14th, 1995, when the Beavers left the Chet Anderson Stadium and ran into the lake, winning the homecoming game after several losing seasons. BSU Alumni and Foundation Communications Manager Micah Fries says two alumni sent in the footage earlier this summer. He dove into the story as the former sports reporter for the Bemidji Pioneer, tracing the lake jump's origin.
Graduate assistant coach, his name was Frank Hagee. He wanted to inspire the team. It was on a bad losing streak. So he wrote this faux post-game article that said that the Beavers won the game and in a fit of jubilation that they raced into the lake and went celebrating with a swim in Lake Bemidji. And I think it made waves around campus and kind of circulated around the student body. They actually upset Winona State, the defending conference champions, which was a really great win for the program, let alone one that was on a losing streak and really needed a win. True to form of the faux article, they went in, pads and all, into the lake, and tradition was born from there.
The last few years of Beaver homecoming wins have seen much warmer temperatures, with this year's homecoming temp reaching 85 degrees. Fries thinks football players are more excited about the win than worried about the temperature.
It didn't look very warm, especially, you know, with last week's memory of how nice and warm that was. But I don't think they cared what the temperature was, right? They were so excited to get in that lake.
Bemidji State's homecoming traditions find more than football to honor their present and past student bodies.
We have a lot of really cool alums, probably more than we can give awards to, but we get to give out some awards and kind of recognize the good work that some of our alums are doing every year, which is a really cool opportunity that we get to do.
Freeze says planning is already underway for homecoming in 2027, which marks a major milestone.
So 1927 was the first ever homecoming at Bemidji State when the school was 8 years old, and they decided they wanted to start having homecoming. Kind of was popping up around the country, and they decided that it was time. And so we're coming up on 100 years in 2 years now, which we're already planning for and you know, kind of getting the ball rolling on that stuff.
Free says the alumni leaders in the classroom program is especially meaningful for current students during homecoming.
An opportunity for alums to go into a class of, you know, kind of their career field and kind of speak of their expertise or answer questions that students have, you know, those students who are maybe seeking out, do I want to be in this field? What does it look like? How do I succeed? And so we have alums who give back their time and be involved in that way and has really benefit students, I think.
With the Bemidji State Honors Gala and alumni in the classroom, alumni and families come back to campus every year, joining current students for homecoming events.
This is the weekend that they circle on their calendars and want to come back, and it's a reunion with their college buddies or you know, other, I know a lot of parents are here with, you know, their parents are the football players and they're here tailgating. They have a big presence always. So things like that. So every year it's in the thousands.
Bemidji State's Alumni and Foundation recently launched the Regrow Our Roots campaign, a fundraiser to replant some of the hundreds of mature trees that fell in the June 2025 severe storm. The organization offers numerous ways for alumni to reconnect through meetups held throughout the United States as well in the Twin Cities Metro.
At least once a year, it feels like. So definitely lots of ways to get involved. And like I said, we make it as easy as possible and hopefully as fun as possible, too.
More information is on their website at bsualumni.org. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXC.org, where you can also find content from our music, Phenology, and morning show teams. From the KAXC News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is sponsored by Woodland Bank, with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Dedicated to serving the financial needs of the community and their customers. More info at woodland.bank.
It is 8:37. Thanks for tuning in. It's the Tuesday morning show on People Powered KAXE. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. Coming up, we'll be talking birds.
We receive support from Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty, helping guide your real estate journey in northern Minnesota since 1947. From buying or selling to land or lakeshore, Coldwell Banker Northwoods Realty. More at coldwellbankernorthwoods.com.
And we want to let you know about Kutaska Community Action in Grand Rapids. They are collecting gently used kids' Halloween costumes now until October 15th. That's till tomorrow. Costumes can be dropped off at the former Murphy Elementary building from 9 to 4 weekdays.
Support for KAXE comes from Schroeder Log Home Supply, supplying wood home and craft and cabin owners with specialty sealants, preservatives, and wood finishes. More information at their Grand Rapids store or online at loghelp.com.
It is time to talk birds on the Tuesday morning show. John Latimer joins us from the North Shore. Pam Perry, non-game wildlife biologist, joins us from the Brainerd Lakes area. Good morning, Pam. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Heidi and John. Yeah, it's good to be here. It's October.
Yeah. So, Pam, I took a look at the Et Birdcast for the three counties that you, I think you're in Crow Wing, or you're in Morrison.
Correct.
Okay. So
yes.
The three counties that each of us are sitting in. So last night in Itasca County, 2,302,800 birds migrating. Cook County, where John is, 838,200. And Crow Wing County, 2,467,900 birds migrating. Wow.
Yep. They're leaving. They're leaving because many of them are insect eaters or partially insect eaters, and they're heading out because, you know, we had a frost, we had a good frost, and insects are fewer, and Yeah, birds are moving. That's what happens at this time of year.
I've been sitting here along the North Shore, Pam. The lake is right out my front window. I've been watching the robins and thrushes. Thrushes seem to be on the backside of the house in the woods a little bit, and the robins are right out front in the mountain ash. And I've been watching them eat the berries on the mountain ash, and they'll wrench them loose from the cluster. And immediately when it's in their beak, they have some way of assessing whether or not it's one they want to eat or not. And if it's one they don't want to eat, they just drop it and grab another one.
Yeah, there's a lot of them out there, so they can be choosy, right? And I wonder if they aren't testing them to see how ripe they are, or there's something. As you've observed, there's something going on where they're picking, this one's good, no, this one's not, and they drop it, let me try another one. And that's, the robins are switching to fruit because earthworms are, you know, just not as, everything's slowing down, you know, with that. And they're not as active, it's not as warm. And robins are one of those birds that can change, can adjust their habits. And it's one of the things that makes them so successful. And they're in flocks. So watch you're seeing them on the mountain ash. I'm seeing them in crab apple trees, you know, doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell my kids we're walking along and they always want to know, they find these little, what I call bird apples, and they want to know if they can eat them. And I say, well, they're not that tasty. Mm-mm. And the birds are depending on those for their food. They can't stop at a grocery store and get something to eat. They need those apples. So let's leave.
They do. They do. So I wanted to mention too, this, you mentioned thrushes already, I'll get back to them, but I wanted to mention sparrows, because white-throated sparrows, and I'm sure you're seeing many of them on the North Shore, we're seeing them here in Brainerd as well. And sparrows are one of those group of birds that many people go, I can't identify sparrows, or it's really hard. And this time of year, we've got, there's a group of species that comes through. White throateds are the most numerous. And then we see white crowns and harris and fox sparrows. But they're all big sparrows. They're like about seven inches long. And you're going to see them in flocks. And I really love to, when I get a whole bunch of white throated sparrows, because you get a big flock, you just go through and check them all. Is there a white crowned in there? Is there a harris sparrow? Is there something else mixed in? And, you know, that's just kind of fun to watch them. And on October 3rd, what got me thinking about this too was, not quite 2 weeks ago, I was down at Rotary Park along the river, and up pops a sparrow along the road, and I'm driving along, right? And so I'm on a little road, and then there's some brush and bushes, and then there's the river. And I go, oh, what is that? It's so big. And it was a first-year white-crowned sparrow. Mm. And they have brown caps instead of the black and white that we expect to see with the adults. And these white-crowned sparrows, they're big. And you know what they were doing? They were eating buckthorn berries. Yeah, because there's a lot of buckthorn there along the river. And, you know, but for a lot of people, if they were driving by, they'd go, I don't know what it is. It doesn't look like anything. And I saw four of them there, and they were all eating buckthorn berries. And that was kind of fun. So look at these brown birds. They're on the ground, and they are interesting, and they're moving through. And then the other group is the thrushes that you mentioned. And they're the same size. They're just about that 7-inch size. And John, I heard you say probably hermit. And I would agree. Hermit thrushes are the earliest and the latest of the thrushes. So they're the kind of the last going through. Doesn't mean you can't see one of the others, but it's most likely hermit. And They're just, they're heading out and they're on the ground too, and you're going to see them. Look for the reddish tail. When they fly away from you or fly, they'll fly up. If they're along the road, they'll fly up onto a branch, and you'll just see them from behind, and they have that reddish tail. Now, you don't want to confuse those with the fox sparrows, because they have reddish tails too, and they're about the same size. But you'll see the difference. And the fox sparrows have a grayish head, and they really spend more time on the ground, and they're the ones who are scratching in the leaves all the time.
Yeah, yeah. The fox sparrows are predominantly red. The tail, the back.
Yep, yep. And you'll see all that.
And the white throat, well, of course, has the white throat. And I have a flock of them, young and old. I've had them all summer, and they are just busy at the feeder every day. And I suspect
And we don't have them all summer here in Brainerd. You know, that's one of the major differences. You go further south, like to Brainerd, and we see them spring and fall when they're moving through.
I did not realize that. I thought that all of us in northern Minnesota had the pleasure of hearing that song and seeing those birds.
No, and I'm always excited. I love the song. I love hearing them and seeing them, but it's spring and fall for us.
So tell me, the thrushes, what other, well, first of all, the robin is a thrush.
Yes, yes. The robin is in the thrush family, and you can see it most clearly with the young robins when they're so spotted.
Yeah, so is there, do the thrushes also have this switch from insects to fruit, or are they just hunting insects this time of year as they move south, or?
I think they can eat some fruit, but not as much as the robins, you know, and that's kind of why they head out. That's, you know, the robins, as we've talked before about how some robins are overwintering even, and we do get them on the Christmas bird counts. I don't get thrushes on the Christmas bird counts. They've left.
No.
They're gone. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they go, they are going to, how far are they going to go? You know, as far as they need to find the food that they want. And these later migrants, Heidi was talking about all these birds migrating now. These are the late migrants, and they're going to probably stay, most of them, in the U.S. You know, they're just going to go for, they're not the neotropical ones, the warblers and the vireos that left earlier, because they're totally dependent on insects. Yeah.
So if I'm out there and I see a thrush, I think it's a thrush. Hermit thrush is the most common that I see personally. But tell us how we might make a distinction between the hermit thrush and the others, the gray cheek, the Swainsons.
Well, the hermit has got that reddish tail.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that red tail, and the others are, the Swainsons would be kind of grayish all over the back. The wood thrush, you know, big spots on the chest. But, you know, the timing, it's one of the things that birders do, is that they're so aware of the timing of things that often they know what they're seeing before they actually even put their binoculars up to look at it, because they're going, oh, it's October. Oh, yeah, it's most likely hermit thrush. Now, around here, I see a lot of wood thrushes, or I hear wood thrushes more, and I see Swainson's thrushes a lot when they move through. So, you know, it's just, yeah, take a look at them, but, boy, look for that reddish tail on the hermits, and especially further north, that's what you're going to see.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. So, robins, I'll mention a couple other things about robins. Just because I'm seeing so many, and I'm seeing flocks of them, and you mentioned them, you know, they can have up to 3 broods a year. Why are there so many robins? Because they can have 3 broods a year, and they are adaptable. They can eat the earthworms out in the lawns, and they can eat the berries in the fall, and they're just adaptable, whereas many birds that are not as common are not adaptable. They're very specific about their food habits. And that's why blue jays, and I was thinking about blue jays too, because I'm seeing quite a few of them now, they're also very adaptable. In fact, blue jays eat all sorts of things. And acorns is one of their main foods in the fall. And so they're eating acorns, they're spreading them around, you know, and, you know, again, a very adaptable species with a variety of food habits that does very well around here. And those are two birds that people have an easy time identifying as compared to the sparrows and the thrushes.
So I have a question about blue jays. I have blue jays year round.
Yeah.
Are any blue jays? I've often when I talk to them that the blue jays you see in the winter are the ones that come to northern Minnesota because it's so balmy.
Yeah, yeah. That is my understanding from talking with my friend Mike North, who's a bird bander. You know, because how do you tell? They all look the same. But he has told me about how they might, you know, we get birds from Canada often here in the winter, and blue jays, I think, are one of those. And yes, we get some shifting around. These are different blue jays, and some of our blue jays go further south. So, yeah, yeah. They all look the same to us.
We did just get a text that came in. First of all, great program to John and Pam. She did not know, this is from Kelly Ray, that the robin was a thrush. And she's got a question for you guys. She said it's about eagles and why some of them stick around. Will the golden eagle migrate? It came and rusted in a tree above my cabin. I'm very worried about my dog, who is now almost 14 pounds. They have an eye on her. I bought a large stuffed animal to sit in the yard and look like her mother. Also, I never let her outside alone right now. She probably won't weigh more than 25 or 30 pounds. Should I be worried always? I really need your advice.
You know, these are the kind of questions I used to get when I worked at the DNR. Eagles are 10 to 12 pounds. You know, up to maybe 14, a big female or, you know, one of those. A dog that's that going to be 30 pounds? No. Under 10 pounds, I would be a little more concerned. But, you know, eagles aren't as heavy or big and strong as they kind of look. You know, they can't lift more food or lift off something that's, you know, or tackle it. I wouldn't worry about that. John?
Many people tell me, oh, yeah, eagle's nest filled with dog collars. And
no.
Nobody that I know who's ever inspected an eagle's nest has found a dog collar.
No. I've heard some rumors about them taking cats. I would worry more about great horned owls. Great horned owls will tackle all sorts of things because great horned owls will kill skunks.
Yeah.
And that's unusual. But eagles, you know, what eagles really like is fish and dead stuff. I was trying to figure out how to say that. Dead things along the road, things that aren't going to fight back.
I think one of the things that has promoted eagles, I mean, other than getting DDT out of the environment and giving them some protection so that they could reestablish themselves, one of the things that has kept eagles in northern Minnesota throughout the year, and I see eagles every month of the year, is roadkill. You know, people hit a deer or they hit a raccoon or they hit something and it lays there on the side of the road and the ravens find it and then the eagles are right there with them and everybody eats.
Yep, and they're scavengers and they're picking all those things up. So yeah, that really helps them. And eagles stay because they can get food like roadkill, even though the lakes are frozen. And Sometimes they can get fish that's thrown out on the lakes, you know, from fishermen. You know, there's different ways, but they, as long as they have food there, they will stay. The majority go further south, where there's where maybe they could get open water, where they can get something else. But we do have some that stay.
Kelly,
I remember.
I was just going to say, Kelly Ray is so appreciative. She just wanted me to pass that on to you, Pam, and
oh,
John,
well,
for that.
Well, good. Good. Yeah, well, when she said her dog, you know, is going to get to 30 pounds or so, and yeah.
Unless it gets hit by a car and you don't recover it.
Yeah, right. That's not going to be a problem. So with that. I was going to go back to, and she said that she didn't know robins were thrushes. Yes, they look so different. But, you know, when you look at the youngsters, you can see the similarities. Blue jays, I find blue jays really fascinating because they make so many sounds. And I've been out with people and you hear a bird sound, they say, "What's that?" I go, "Blue jay." "What's that?" "Blue jay." It's just not their regular jay sound. And they also are mimics, where they will copy songs, and especially from raptors. And all during the summer, because I'll have broadwing hawks in the area and red tails as well, but I'll hear like a broadwing hawk call and I go, is it a broadwing? Is it a hawk or is it the blue jay? And then I'll hear a blue jay call right afterwards. I go, oh, it's my blue jays. It's my blue jays. Yeah, that's all it is. So. They make so many noises. I find that really fascinating and fun, you know, during the time. Now the broadwings have left. We still have red tails around. You know, we're in this transition time for a while. And we'll get more blue jays coming down from Canada. Yeah.
And along with that, we'll get some winter birds that come in.
Oh, like yes. And we will get winter birds coming down, which will be the finches. The finches, yeah. The grosbeaks and things like that. One other note I had on the student reports. Sometimes I'm just amazed at the reports from these students. And one of them said that, and I think it was from Little Falls, they'd been seeing garter snakes and red-bellied snakes. And of course, they're all heading to their hibernaculums now. And you know, the snakes are going to go underground because that's the way that they survive. They have to get someplace where it's not going to freeze and they can get through that. And red-bellied snakes, for all of our listeners out there that have never seen a red-bellied snake, they're less than a foot long and brownish and really slender with this kind of salmon-y reddish belly, and they're one of my absolute favorites, and I haven't seen one all year. So that's what I was thinking when I heard the student reports, was how lucky they were to see that. I've seen garter snakes because they're more common, but the red bellies, I mean, I often find them, but I didn't find any this year.
I didn't find one this year either.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're one of the really easy ones. You catch them and pick them up. They don't bite. They don't do anything. They're too small. Their heads are too small. Their jaws are too small, and they eat insects. So
perfect snake for a perfect snake for children to be introduced to snakes.
It is.
They're harmless.
It is because they're not scary. They're not scary any way. So yeah, I think that's very good.
Yeah, Pam, thanks so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I can't wait to find out what we're going to talk about next month.
Well, next month it will be colder. And I heard Tornado Bob saying we may not get snow in October. Well, that's kind of the way things are going.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Pam. Too bad you can't be with us every day. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Coming up, it is Headwaters. Your host today is DJ Dang.
Support for KAXE comes from the Great Lakes Aquarium with its new exhibit, Lava to Lakes, offering a discovery into what was here before the land we call Minnesota, including sharks, jellyfish, and giant prehistoric fish. Hours and tickets at glaquarium.org. And we receive support from North Holmes Children and